Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're going to be taking a deep dive into something that's, unfortunately pretty common these days. A lot of people don't really fully grasp, I think, the human cost of war. And we're going to zero in on the displacement and refugee crises that are happening right now, specifically in Ukraine and in the Middle East. We've got a bunch of research here, firsthand accounts, too. And the goal is to kind of go beyond just the headlines you see on the news and really understand the long-term consequences of all of this and, look at some ideas for what can be done to help.
You know, it's interesting when we hear the word war, we automatically think of like, buildings being bombed out and the economic fallout. But the true cost is the one that really carries on for generations is the shattering of human lives, you know?
Okay, so let's unpack that a little. We're talking about millions and millions of people literally forced to flee their homes. Either they become internally displaced within their own country, or they become refugees trying to find safety in another country.
And it's just so important to remember that this is not just, numbers on a spreadsheet. These are real people with families, with their own hopes and dreams, and all of a sudden their lives are just completely turned upside down.
And, the ripple effects of this displacement, it's not just about like, meeting their immediate needs like food and shelter. This goes way beyond that. So let's start with Ukraine. I think, the war that escalated in 2022 that triggered like one of the fastest growing displacement crises we've seen, in recent history. It's huge. We're looking at like over 6 million people who fled the country as refugees. And then another like 3 to 4 million internally displaced people. So these are people who are still in Ukraine, but they've had to leave their homes because their homes were destroyed or because their cities and towns are just too dangerous to live in. It's gonna be so hard on people.
Well, and it's just really hard to fathom the emotional toll that all of this takes, you know? Imagine just having to grab your kids in the middle of the night and flee with just the clothes on your back, not knowing if you're ever going to see your home again, you know? It's just immense the trauma. And we're seeing that in the research too. Over 60% of Ukrainian families, they're dealing with mental health issues now, PTSD, anxiety, depression, all of that. And then on top of that, you've got the impact on education, the kids,
The children, right?
because their schools are being bombed. Some of them, and so many families have been displaced. So about a quarter of Ukrainian kids are not getting any consistent in-person learning.
Yeah, that's got to be so disruptive.
It's really putting a whole generation at risk. You know, they're falling behind what could be the long-term consequences of that for their future.
Yeah, no kidding. So we hear all these statistics, it's hard to sometimes wrap your mind around it. But I was reading this one account of a mother from Kharkiv, and she had to walk for days to get to the Polish border. She was carrying her two young children.
Oh my gosh.
They were sleeping in train stations, just relying on the kindness of strangers. Just constant fear of the next attack might happen. And she said, and this is a quote, "I didn't want to leave, but staying meant death."
Wow, that's powerful.
It really is.
That really just highlights the impossible choices that people in these situations are forced to make. You know, leaving everything they know behind, going to a future that's completely uncertain, it's just not a decision anyone should have to make.
No, it's not. And this is something, we see playing out in different ways across the Middle East too, where this displacement has become, it's just a really persistent, tragic issue with really deep roots going way back.
Yeah, it's a long history. And, you know, it's important to understand that the displacement crisis in the Middle East is not like a single event. It's more like this complex web of different crises that are all interconnected, you know? Take Syria, for example. They've been in this humanitarian crisis now for over a decade.
Yeah, it's been going on forever.
Over 5 million refugees have had to leave the country and find refuge somewhere else, and another 7 million internally displaced people within Syria. And then you've got Gaza, where recent escalations have displaced like over 1 million people.
In a tiny area.
In a really, really small area, it's vulnerable. And then Yemen, the civil war there,
Brutal.
just brutal, has created 4 million internally displaced people.
Gosh, so for millions of people in that region, displacement has basically become a way of life.
It really has.
What kind of long-term impact does that have? I mean, not just on individuals, but on entire societies.
It's just devastating. Take Syria again for an example. 90% of the population there is now living below the poverty line.
Not
90%. 90%. And over 12 million people are facing food insecurity.
Wow.
So, I mean, the basic fabric of that society has just been shredded.
Right.
How do you rebuild when the majority of your citizens are struggling just to survive?
Right.
And it's not that much easier for those who manage to escape, you know. In Gaza, over 60% of the housing has been destroyed or damaged. People are living in tents or these overcrowded shelters, often without even basic necessities like clean water or electricity.
So we've got that level of destruction and deprivation. It's hard to imagine.
It's really tough.
It makes you think, okay, when the immediate danger is over, how do these societies even begin to heal
Yeah.
and rebuild, not just physically, but emotionally and socially, after experiencing this kind of drama for so long?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's something we need to be asking ourselves, not just in Ukraine and the Middle East, but anywhere that's been ravaged by conflict. Because displacement doesn't just stay put, you know? It has these ripple effects that go far beyond just those immediate regions.
Yeah, it impacts the whole world.
It impacts neighboring countries, the global community.
So that's what we're going to be diving into next, are those global ripple effects of these crises and what they mean for all of us.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Okay, so we've talked about that immediate impact, you know, of displacement inside Ukraine and the Middle East. But like you said, these crises, they just don't stop there. They create ripple effects
Yeah.
that spread all over the place.
Exactly. Displacement, it really drives instability in a huge way. We're talking, you know, increased poverty, probably going to see rises in crime, and even, you know, the risk of radicalization goes up when people feel like they've just got nothing left to lose. I mean, this can destabilize entire regions, and the consequences are far-reaching.
And it's not all about security concerns either, right?
Ew.
There's a huge economic strain on the countries that are hosting refugees,
Absolutely.
especially the ones that are already, you know, struggling with limited resources.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. The influx of refugees can just put so much pressure on infrastructure, social services, even the job market. And then you start to see resentment building up among the local population, which can fuel even more political instability, and it can even trigger a backlash against refugees who are just trying to survive.
So then it just becomes this awful cycle where displacement just breeds more instability.
Yeah.
And that makes it harder to fix the root causes of the problems.
Absolutely.
And on a global scale,
Yeah.
how does all of this impact, like, our systems of cooperation and compassion?
It's a real test of our values, you know, how we as a global community respond to these crises, whether it's with empathy and action or, you know, indifference and closed borders. It really says a lot about who we are and what we stand for. I mean, are we actually willing to share the burden? Are we committed to those, you know, basic human rights and dignity for everyone, no matter where they're from or what their situation is? These are tough questions, but we can't afford to just ignore them.
So let's talk solutions.
Okay.
I think there's always this initial outpouring of support and aid when a crisis first hits,
Yeah,
which is great.
of course.
But is humanitarian aid really enough to truly address the long-term challenges of displacement?
It's a crucial first step, don't get me wrong. I mean, it provides that immediate relief, saves lives. But if we're being honest, a lot of times humanitarian aid, it's just a band-aid for a much deeper wound. The funding for these efforts is almost always falling short. I mean, look at the UN's appeals for 2024 for both Ukraine and Syria. Only about half of what they needed was met. And even when the aid does make it through, it tends to focus only on those immediate survival needs, food, shelter, medical care,
The essentials.
which of course are essential, but we also need to be thinking long term. You know, what are the solutions that get at the root causes of displacement and empower people to rebuild their lives?
So what would those long-term solutions look like?
Well, for one thing, we need to shift our whole approach from reactive to proactive. Instead of waiting for crises to erupt and then scrambling to respond, we need to invest in conflict prevention, peace building, you know, tackling the root causes of displacement instead of just dealing with the symptoms after the fact.
So what would that actually look like? Like, give me some practical steps.
Sure. So in Ukraine, for example, that means we need to be pushing for a negotiated settlement, using diplomatic channels to try and de-escalate the conflict, get all the parties to the table. And we also need to figure out how to address the underlying geopolitical tensions that led to this whole mess in the first place.
And what about the Middle East, where conflict and instability have been simmering, you know, for decades?
Right. Well, we need a multi-pronged approach there. In Syria, for instance, we need to address the political grievances that fueled the uprising, support inclusive governance, and try to create conditions that would allow refugees to return safely and voluntarily. in Yemen. We need a ceasefire immediately.
Yeah.
And a political solution that actually gets at the root causes of that conflict. And in Gaza, easing the blockade is a big one.
Right.
And supporting economic development to give people some hope for the future.
But these are all like incredibly complicated political situations, right?
They are.
I mean, it's not like there's just a simple off switch for conflict.
You're absolutely right. There are no easy solutions, but that doesn't mean we just give up. It means we need to commit to sustained diplomatic efforts, support those local peace-building initiatives, and use our economic and political clout to try and nudge everyone towards peace.
Okay, so that makes sense. So beyond addressing the conflict itself, are there other key areas we need to focus on to create lasting solutions?
Yeah, definitely. I think we need to completely rethink how we do refugee integration.
That.
Instead of relying on these temporary camps, which often just become these protracted situations where people are stuck for years,
right.
We need to support the host countries in providing refugees with access to jobs, education, language training, and opportunities to contribute to their new communities.
So basically empowering refugees to become self-sufficient, integrated members of society,
yeah.
Not just passive recipients of aid.
Exactly. And there are some really interesting models out there for how to do this. Well, I mean, look at Canada, for example.
Yeah.
They have this private sponsorship program.
I've heard about that.
Where community groups can actually sponsor refugee families, providing them with financial and social support as they get settled in.
That's amazing.
It's a fantastic way to foster a more welcoming and inclusive environment for refugees.
It sounds like a win-win, you know?
It is.
Supporting the refugees, but also enriching the host communities.
Absolutely. And the thing that's so powerful about this is that human connection.
Right.
I was talking to one Syrian refugee, and he said that the hardest part of being displaced wasn't the lack of food or the cold or any of that. It was the loneliness and the feeling of being invisible.
That's heartbreaking.
It is. And it's something we can all do something about.
Yeah, that's a good point. It reminds us that, you know, behind all those statistics and headlines, there are real people with real stories, real hopes, real dreams.
Absolutely.
So how do we move past feeling overwhelmed by these huge crises and actually do something? How can we as individuals go beyond feeling sympathy and actually take meaningful action?
Yeah, it's easy to think, oh my gosh, this is so huge. How can anything I do even make a dent?
Yeah.
But I think you have to remember that even like the smallest actions, if enough people do them, can create real change.
Yeah, it's like that saying, you know, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world.
Right.
Indeed, it's the only thing they ever has. And when we're talking about this displacement crisis, there are so many things that we can all do, like right now, today, to actually make a difference.
Oh, okay. So let's get down to it. What are some things that our listeners can actually do to get involved?
One of the most powerful things you can do, honestly, is just educate yourself and then raise awareness in your own circles. Share the stories that you've heard. Talk to your friends and family about this. Help people understand the human cost of all of this conflict and displacement.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when people understand something, then they start to care. And when they care, they're more likely to do something about it. That's so true. It's all about moving beyond just like the numbers and the statistics and really connecting with those human stories.
Exactly. And don't underestimate the power of your wallet. Even a small donation to a good organization that's working on the ground can have a real impact on people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do a little research. Find those organizations that are working directly with these communities that are empowering people and addressing those long-term needs.
Yeah, there are so many great organizations out there doing amazing work, often with very limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, choosing to support them financially that can really have like a direct impact.
Oh, absolutely. It can. And another thing that's really powerful is advocacy.
Okay.
Contact your elected officials. Let them know that this issue is important to you.
Right.
And urge them to support policies that are actually going to promote peace and protect refugees and provide the humanitarian aid that's needed.
Yeah.
You can also join or support organizations that are fighting for refugee rights and pushing for those bigger systemic changes.
Right. So use your voice because your voice matters.
Yeah.
And using it to advocate for change can be really effective.
It really can be. And what about those of us who want to get involved on a more like personal level?
Right.
If you live in an area that has a refugee community, there are so many ways to connect. You can volunteer at a resettlement agency. You can tutor kids in English.
Right.
You can donate clothing and household items or just reach out and offer friendship and support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those acts of kindness and just human connection can mean the world to someone who's lost so much.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, it just strikes me that while these crises can feel completely overwhelming, there's also this element of hope in those stories of resilience that we see coming out of them.
Absolutely. You know what I find so inspiring is that even in the middle of just unimaginable hardship, people find a way to show courage and compassion and this determination to rebuild their lives. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And it reminds us that even in the darkest of times, the human spirit can still shine through.
I love that. So for our listeners who might be feeling overwhelmed or maybe they just don't even know where to start, what's the one thing you want them to take away from our conversation today?
I would say choose hope over despair. Choose action over apathy, because every single one of us has the power to make a difference in someone else's life. And when we all come together, when we combine our efforts, we can create this ripple effect of compassion and change that can honestly transform the world.
That's a beautiful thought to end on. And on that note, I want to thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the human cost of war and these displacement crises in Ukraine and the Middle East.
It's been my pleasure.
We've covered a lot today, but this is just the beginning of the conversation. I encourage you to keep learning, keep exploring these issues, keep engaging in whatever way feels right for you.
Yeah.
Because the world needs your compassion, your action, and your hope. Thanks for listening.